No point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
All right, welcome to the Off Your Brand Show. Today, I'm your host, Doug Crow. You're going to want to take notes, especially today, because I've got an amazing guest on today. This guy has got his viewpoint is exactly where you want to be, right? He believes that we are all born with unlimited potential. I tend to agree. And as a former classroom teacher, he also believes in the power of lifelong learning, of course. His beliefs have shaped him in primary and goal in life, which is to help others uncover their talents like you so they can reach their full potential. And prior to joining his current company, he had a great honor serving as a CEO for Cornerstone, a consultant with PricewaterhouseCoopers, engineer with the Intel Corporation along the way. He was fortunate enough to earn degrees from the University of Michigan and University of Notre Dame. And thanks God every day for his amazing wife and three wonderful children. Welcome to the show today, Mr. Tom Willis. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Wow, what a great thing. From teacher to corporate mogul. I love it. I have a couple of friends who do the opposite. They work the corporate world and they get burned out and they want to go teach. So that's interesting. We want to talk about your book and stuff today, but I want to give people a reason to stick around. So you mentioned before we started the show that like 80 to 90% of all strategy, especially when it comes to culture, fails. Is that right?
Yeah. Depends on which article you read or which source you trust, but
it's more than 51%. It doesn't matter. No matter what you're doing, it's like it's not working, but people continue to still do the same thing, hoping for a different result. That's the definition of insanity, I think.
Indeed. Costing billions of dollars along the way.
Right. So we're going to talk about saving your corporation millions, if not billions of dollars on your corporate culture initiatives and strategy based on the principles that Tom's going to share with us in his book. But before we do that, I want to find out more about the man behind the book here. So give me a little bit of 5-minute version of your life story here. You wanted to be a teacher and then all of a sudden, no? What happened?
Yeah. Life just happens sometimes and it's not always a straight path. I always loved education. I always loved kids, but frankly, I avoided it because of, you don't make a lot of money as a teacher, and I'm embarrassed to admit that, but that's true. And so for years, I kind of avoided it, ended up working for those big companies you mentioned. And, long story short, I ended up getting fired from PricewaterhouseCoopers in Chicago, along with a few thousand other people during the dot-com explosion back in 2000. And so I ended up going over to Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, Africa, spending some time with one of my best friends over there teaching, and just loved it, fell in love with it, reminding myself, you know, life is short and we only got one life to live. So why not live a life of purpose? And so I came back to the States and started teaching, and one thing led to another, and ultimately got promoted to become the superintendent or the CEO of the school system. And I just had a blast doing that. Very, very hard work. We were in the city of Detroit. Was there for about 15 years, but absolutely loved it and learned a lot about culture and leadership along the way.
And that's what we want to talk about. So that's great. A little overseas thing to reset the soul and then in the corporate world here. So when it comes to a lot of things in leadership and business, there's a lot of areas that people can specialize in. You chose, or maybe it was chosen for you, the idea of culture in the company.
Yeah, we probably heard the saying that culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Right.
And it's attributed to Peter Drucker, although he didn't say it originally. Yeah. And we think that's true, absolutely. But we actually think it's much, much bigger than that, that culture eats everything. If you're a leader, if you're a CEO in particular, and you only have time to do one thing, I would encourage you to make your culture better because it will pay off. Again, there's been lots of studies on this about 700-800% increases in profit based on, you know, how good your culture is. And so it's not a theoretical idea. This is very pragmatic. If you want, you know, if you're driven by money, it makes sense. Or if you're driven by just wanting to provide a better place to work for your people, which, by the way, will then drive more money. Or if you're a nonprofit and you just want to serve your clients better, you want to serve the people you serve better,
right?
And invest in your culture.
Wow. This might take more than 20 minutes to cover this stuff. What is a common misconception? Why are people, missing the mark on improving or transforming their culture?
Well, a few reasons, but the biggest is that we don't realize how much of it is unconscious. Mm-hmm. You can walk into an organization and you can almost taste the culture in the air within the first minute or two. You can tell like what kind of organization this is. I could walk into a school, for instance, I could tell within 30 seconds what the energy was within the building. Well, if you think about that, and when we talk about culture, we use these invisible type words. It feels this way, or it senses this way, or it's the norms, you know, and so it all gets back to most of what shapes a culture are the unconscious behaviors of the human beings that make up the culture. So if you want to impact the culture, you've got to impact the unconscious behaviors and ideas and thoughts of the people that make up the culture. Because if you want to grow a team, if you want to grow an organization, there's only one way to do that. You have to grow the people, because an organization is nothing more than a bunch of people working together.
Right. Wow. That's, you know, when you say it, it makes so much, I mean, it so makes so much sense. It's so clear. Why are people not seeing that? Why do they keep going back to the bottom line or the marketing or branding or things that are, maybe it's because it's easier to identify because it's not so invisible, or what do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think probably a couple of reasons. One is that we've always done it that way. And so, you know, if Bob does their culture work this way, or they do their strategic planning this way, then I should, right? Yeah. We're following the blind for decades. The other is it's not easy. You know, this work is not easy. We actually guarantee results. So we know it's very possible. We've done it for hundreds and hundreds of clients across the country and Europe, but it's not easy. It takes some very intentional, very conscious effort on part of the CEO and the executive team to really dive deep into this work, because you're really diving into yourself and how are you showing up at work, because you are likely causing the very challenges that you are frustrated by.
Always. Probably always look in the mirror first. Yes. Wow. Okay. So I run a 200 employee company. I've got, you know, three offices scattered around and whatnot. It's half the people are working remotely nowadays. I want to know how do you work with the remote or the hybrid environment with culture?
Well, when COVID started, we were like, we're in trouble. We're going out of business because we do all in-person work. And we said, well, we gotta innovate. We gotta get creative. And so we actually started a brand new group of CEOs that we convene once a month on Zoom, that we thought we would do it for 6 months and then COVID would be over. Ha ha. Well, here we are 4 years later, and we're actually continuing to grow that. It's called the Interchange, and it's just an amazing group of human beings. And we now have a third cohort starting. So that's one sort of real life example. The other is we actually started to do our work on Zoom, and we thought, well, let's give it a shot and see what happens.
Right.
And we were blown away at how effective it was. It was not as good as being in person, I'm not going to lie, but it was pretty close. It was probably 85% or so as effective. The work is to be intentional though about it. You've got to be really intentional as a leader about what are you doing with the time you have. How are you using, if you got a 1 hour meeting with your team on Zoom, it doesn't really matter that it's on Zoom. It matters how are you using it? What's the intentional approach that you're taking to shape and to improve things?
Yeah. We have a dedicated Slack channel in our Slack group. One that's just for personal stuff. You know, what'd you do today, just to keep it a little friendly with our small companies.
Yeah, it's all the little things like that that can add up. But at the end of the day, it's really gets back to who are the leaders being.
Right. Yeah. Ooh. So give me a story. Maybe I'll now help me with my next, because I have a bunch of questions in my brain, but it'd probably be best if it's framed up with a story. I'd like to hear about like the biggest transformation you saw was somebody was like, company was really decaying, culture crappy, and you were able to come in there and save the day. Can you tell me a little brief vignette here?
Well, we actually don't do a lot of that work, Doug. We don't do a lot of turnaround work. We work with organizations that are doing quite well, and they're looking for a breakthrough to a whole new level of effectiveness.
That's fine. We'll take a story from the winners. That's good.
From that world. Yeah. So this is part of the problem is because executive coaching usually gets labeled as like come in and fix somebody. And we think out of the gate, that's a failed approach. And we want to help people who are interested in improving. So it's a really important foundational element. So a few stories that come to mind, but probably the most recent or most obvious was a CEO. He had about 1,000 employees across multiple locations. And he realized that he was really frustrated unconsciously that they weren't producing better results for their patients and financially, frankly. And he was keeping it bottled up because he was such a nice guy. He was really kind. For years, frankly, he was kind of bottling it up in an unconscious level, and it came bubbling out of him. And he got some coaching from his team, and he realized in the course of the first 24 hours that, oh my gosh, people aren't doing what they say they're going to do because I'm not. You know, I'm not being a person of integrity. I'm not integrating my word and my action, which is really what integrity is all about, is to integrate your word and your action to do what you say you're going to do. And because he was busy, right? All CEOs and superintendents get really busy, but that's not an excuse. And so what he realized is that he had to go to work on having his yes be yes and his no be no. So he actually started saying no to more things so he could say yes with integrity and deliver on those things and in the time that he agreed to. And he wasn't doing 100%, but he got, you know, 95, 98% of the time he was doing that. And he said within a month or two, he said, I'm witnessing all these spontaneous acts of accountability. You know, you've got all these people who are now following the leader's lead. Mm-hmm. And now they're doing what they say they're going to do. And sure enough, when you get a culture of like that, you get a culture of integrity, it starts to show up in the results, in the financial results especially.
Yeah. Tell me about how your guarantee works at your company. I'm very curious about the metrics you assign to that to make, you know, to give person that value.
Well, it depends on what the CEO is trying to accomplish, frankly. Every program is customized.
Okay.
So the extreme on one end is we had an organization, a nonprofit actually, that was hemorrhaging cash. It was losing a couple $1 million a year, and it had a significant fund balance that it could tap into. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that's unsustainable. Mm-hmm. And so we came in, and that was the goal, is help us turn around financially. Okay. All the way to the other end of the spectrum, you know, the sort of quote unquote soft skills. You know, I'm the CEO. I'm tired of my executives coming to me and complaining about the other executives. I feel like a babysitter, and I want to really create more collaboration and break down the silos. Mm-hmm. So much more subjective. So at the end of the day, we put our butt on the line for producing those results, and the CEO gets to decide whether we generate them or not. And if we don't, then we'll keep going until we do for no additional fee.
I love that. We do the same thing in our company. It just put proof in the pudding. Me and I'm going to just do it.
Exactly. Great. And very few people are willing to do that. It's mm-hmm. amazing to me. Yep. Very few people are willing to actually put their butt on the line.
Yep. And how long have you been doing this?
Well, my business partner's been at this for 33 years. And we've been working together for about 8 years now.
It works. Okay. But we're not going to do this turnaround stuff. Only companies who are doing okay want to do better.
Well,
losers,
I should say
the losers go elsewhere.
It's not quite that black and white, but it's probably 90% organizations that are doing quite well.
Okay.
And they feel like they've plateaued.
Yeah.
We have done a handful of really struggling organizations, but those are really unique cases.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. I actually like that. All right. So we got some measurements here, and I know everything's customized, so we're not going to, you know, we can't, you know, give away the whole playbook here, but I'd love to hear a couple of unusual or unexpected things you do to help a company like the nonprofit. They're like, you know, losing a couple million a year. What kind of things, you know, out of the maybe the dozen things you did, can you give me one or two that were unexpected?
Yeah, well, we're happy to share the playbook. It's in our book. You know, it's in the.
There you go. So I'll hold that up. Might as well get the shameless plug in there. The great resignation, cut it out. The great engagement. I love it.
Yes. Okay. And the subtitle is how CEOs create exceptional cultures.
Beautiful.
So we tried to take our work and put it into a book. Mm-hmm. And we think we came pretty close, but it is hard to replicate experiential human-based work. Mm-hmm. You know, we do a 2.5-day retreat, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's hard to replicate that in a book, but we got a lot in there, a lot of very pragmatic tips and tools as well, by the way. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested, you can check that out on Amazon.
Yeah.
But as far as the what are we trying to produce? Was that your question?
Yeah, like if somebody we want to give them a reason to buy the book to get the playbook. So give me one, you know, step one or step two or step seven. I don't care. Just give me tease me with a couple of things or one or two things that would be unexpected. You know, I didn't think that would relate or work. That's in your playbook.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, getting back to where we started, right? This idea that culture is mostly unconscious.
Yeah.
Well, then what does that mean? What's below the surface? You know, what are the things that are, using the iceberg analogy? What's below the surface that we're not seeing as a team?
Right.
And we've identified over those 30 plus years, 12 cultural mindsets that get in the way, frankly, of being a really strong team. So you've got things like, you know, people having personal agendas. You've got people having nefarious intent, avoidance, people having judgmentalism, exclusion, retribution, conventionality, powerlessness.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the example of that nonprofit that was losing money, you had people that felt ultimately powerless because the CEO was making all the decisions. Well, when you've got, you know, several hundred employees and everything has to run through the CEO.
Wow.
And the CEO is frustrated, by the way, that he was making all the decisions. So it was this vicious cycle, right?
Yeah.
And so they went to work on, you know, giving authority that was proportionate to responsibility. So the antidote to powerlessness is granting authority.
Yeah.
And that's really what made the difference. It wasn't rocket science. It was hard to implement. It was hard to bring that to life. But once you started to empower your people, to give them power and put more local autonomy and control and authority over your budget, as an example, all of a sudden things start changing quite quickly.
Yeah. A good friend of mine had a $100 million services company. And I asked him for some, you know, what's your business tip? He goes, never expect anybody to do anything more than 80% of what you would do. You know, it's like, you know what? You're the owner. No one's going to work as hard or as deep as you do. So just 80% will be about average, I guess. All right, fine. Lawyer expectations was the word there. Second thing he said was, oh, you know, I'd never hire anybody that I wouldn't have over for dinner. You know, just the family culture of people that you like to hang out with and work with. You don't want, I mean, because some star performers in the sales world are kind of, you know, egocentric, whatnot. But if you don't like them, are they worth the expense? You know?
Yeah, you'll hear people talk about a toxic superstar, and we say it genuinely, right? They say like, oh, he's just a toxic superstar. Yeah. She's just a toxic superstar, but she's really good at sales. Well, you can't have both. Those are oxymorons. You can't be toxic and a superstar. A superstar, by definition, is not toxic.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So
it makes sense.
We settle for these things, and they end up destroying our culture. They end up destroying our team because of one person's ability in a certain area. Well, don't tolerate that. You gotta get both. You gotta get somebody who's not toxic and is a superstar in sales or whatever.
Right. Can you give me a little snippet of what it was like, the conversation with that CEO, as soon as you guys realized that, you know, he had to focus on the delegation, basically, responsibility. What was that conversation like? How long did it take him to say, aha?
Good question. Probably an hour or two, you know, in the first day of the retreat, we have some proprietary surveys that we use and those really open up the doors. And then we also have our own, it's called the Elevate system. It's a 4-factor behavioral model that was built as a coaching tool. So it's similar to like a Myers-Briggs or a DISC, if anybody's done one of those. The big difference is we built ours with the intent of using it to create a coaching culture where people could use it to coach each other. Mm-hmm. And we also think that it's really unfortunate that many times we label people with these things. You know, we get labeled, well, you've got a high need for control, or you're very dominant, or you're an ENTJ, or you're a whatever.
Yeah, right.
And we think those labels can be quite damaging. And as leaders, we don't get to be stuck. We don't get to be away. Now, we have tendencies. We may default to certain behaviors, but it doesn't mean that we get to stay stuck that way, because that's not leadership.
Right, right. Yeah, very true. Okay. Has there been ever a situation that you guys couldn't fix?
What's that?
Has there been a situation, a culture that you guys couldn't fix or couldn't help?
You know, it's a good question. We, before my time, so probably about 10, 12 years ago, Brad did tell me that he had one CEO that just got really scared because a lot of it was getting, he was realizing how much of the challenges were with him and his leadership style, that he quite literally just disappeared. He literally vanished. He kind of ghosted them. And this was before it was easy to find folks. And to Brad's credit and his previous partner, they ended up actually finishing the work without the CEO and just working with the team. So it was,
as long as the CFO cut the check, I guess it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It was moderately successful, obviously, because the CEO wasn't involved. But I think that's literally the only example in the last, you know, at least 20 plus years that I'm aware of.
Very cool. Very cool. If a CEO is watching this, or looking at your book, they're, you know, they're brand new, they got put into the role, what would be the first step they could do, self-assessment wise, whatnot, to understand what's going on in their own house?
Yeah, actually, we'll put together a landing page for you that you can put on the drop it on the page here, but it'll be phoenixperform.com/authoryourbrand. So
that's right.
After you. And I'll make sure that we include one of those tools. Actually, we call it the Engaged Life Inventory.
Okay.
Our book is called The Great Engagement. And, you know, as we are all CEOs of our own life. And so I like to think about CEO as Chief Engagement Officer. So if you're going to create a more engaging culture, a more engaged team, it starts with you, and you got to do a self-assessment. How engaged are you in your life?
Yeah.
And so it walks through all these different themes and the foundations of an engaged life.
Mm-hmm. Very great. I love that. I'm going to end on that. That's a brilliant statement. Folks, the place to go is phoenixperform.com/authoryourbrand, because Tom is smart enough to include both our brands in there to get your assessment, your question, and of course, a link to the book. Hold that book up again. I want to get a copy of this thing myself. So,
yes, absolutely.
The Great Engagement. Sounds like we need to turn this 80% failure rate over to a 90% success rate with culture. And this is the way to do it, guys. So check out phoenixperform.com/authoryourbrand. It's also in the show notes below. Download that if you want to get a transcript from the show. Tom, any parting words?
No, just thanks. I appreciate it very much, the time. And if we can be helpful to anybody out there, happy to do so.
You bet. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you very much. That concludes the show for today. Author Your Brand, you're going to want to take notes. If you haven't, please do. If you're too tired, don't want to bother, just download them right here. Put your email in there, download show notes, happy to take care of you and get you a copy of Tom's book. You can click on Phoenix. What was the name of the thing again? I'm sorry. It was phoenixperform.com/authoryourbrand. Get it. You will thank me later. Have a good day.